Mana3 Media.
Branches is not only a place to go to find help for mental, emotional, and behavioral issues. Branches is just as interested in the physical well-being of the people that we care for. That is why Branches Wellness is here to provide help in losing weight, in just overall health management, and in medication management. Body, soul, and spirit. Care for the whole individual. So Branches, the place to turn to find hope and healing in the midst of a hurting and sometimes difficult world. Let's face it, the world is just a messy place. There's probably not one of us that hasn't heard a lesson or some information at some point and said, hey, with all that's going on around me, what difference does that make? I'm Dr. Mike Courtney. I'm a counselor, a lifelong recoverer, a husband, a father, a business owner, a grandfather, and I love to ask this question, what difference does that make? Welcome to What Difference Does That Make? This podcast that we dedicate to helping people live healthier, happier, and sometimes holier lives in a very messed up and difficult world. It is always fun to do this. It's always fun to hear people's response to the podcast. You're very kind, very gracious in doing that. By the way, speaking of that, it helps us if you would refer friends to that. It just kind of helps to get the word out. I need the affirmation, and David Wilkinson needs the money. So,
truth.
My great friend and producer, David Wilkinson, is here. David, it's always fun to see you.
It's always fun to see you, Mike. Literally, it really is fun to be with you. I always enjoy just our time catching up, and whether we're recording or not recording, it's fun chatting with you.
We start these introductions and we really have no idea where they're going to go.
Nope.
This is very stream of consciousness kind of stuff.
I wouldn't have it any other way. Honestly, I love it that way. Just love it.
We're kind of like, I see us as like the Smothers Brothers, and you're the,
Which one?
The wise, quiet,
come on.
Dick Smothers. Was he the one? And then I'm the buffoon Smothers.
The buffoon. Give me a break.
Hey, it's good to see you.
It's good to see you too.
I am very excited about this episode. It's a hard one a little bit. I'm talking to a good friend of mine, Rhonda Rush. I'm not telling you anything that she won't tell you in the episode, but Rhonda literally came out of the prison system. She had an opiate addiction that cost her nearly everything, and gave her heart to God while in prison. Dramatically turned around to the point that she is now the recovery peer specialist for a large and growing church in Middle Tennessee. Speaks a lot to all kinds of groups about recovery. She's been published in a couple of Christian periodicals. Just a great lady. She's done a great, great job. But her story comes, you know, to take away from the story of Joseph. She goes from the pit to the palace.
Gotcha.
And she talks about that today. It's a fun interview.
That's going to be really good.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad we're making room for that.
Well, Rhonda is... She is passionate about the healing that God has given her and seeing that take place in other people. Now, I will say, as a part of her story, because of the demographic that she works with, she also sees it not happen a lot, and that breaks her heart. And she'll have people that she has worked with for a while that end up overdosing and losing their life to that addiction. She takes it personally every time. But wow, it's a good story. She's a good lady.
And in this episode will be truly to feature that conversation. This isn't going to have a specific teaching in it, right? We're just featuring the conversation.
Yeah,
right?
we kind of got away from that for a little while. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to it. But more often than not, it seems of the last four or five episodes, we've not done a teaching just because the conversations tend to be a little bit longer, but they're really, really good. I called this episode The Anatomy of an Addiction. Mm. And as you listen to Rhonda's story, it begins to make sense. Oh, that's how you get to this place. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, that's how you get out of it. So it's really, really good.
You know what we have done, though, in every episode for the last few times?
Speaking of addiction, because I think you've become addicted to
this. I'm addicted to this segment. This is going to be fun. This is where I get to ask you those deep, profound questions.
You had this wonderful creative idea that you were going to draw questions out of a hat and ask me something that I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And you don't know what I'm about to ask you.
That's exactly right.
And it is that creative title called Ask Mike. That is the segment that we have stumbled into.
In all honesty, that is the high mark of this whole segment, is just that it has such a neat title, Ask Mike.
What happens as a result is much more profound than the title itself. All right, I got the question here. All right, Mike, I want you to brag on someone. This isn't a question. I want you to brag on someone, anyone. Just shine a light on them for a moment. I don't care who it is.
Okay. I want to brag on you.
Oh, well,
you're the one asking the question, so I'm gonna turn this around on you. And it's fun to sit here across from you and see you blush now while I'm doing this. Yeah. But we have been friends for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And I have to be very sensitive how I say this, but you have mentioned it before, so you can edit this out if you don't want me to say it. We met in a time where you were going through some difficulties. You were going
absolutely
through some struggles.
Yes, in counseling sessions.
And I have watched over the years, not because of that counseling, but because of your sensitivity to the Holy Spirit. You're allowing God to lead you. You've gone through massive career change. You've stepped out in faith, working on your own, being very, very creative, helping lots of people. I refer people to you. David will help you with a podcast. And to watch how God has used you to impact people, men, dads especially, to speak into the lives of your own children and walk with them through good days and bad days. And always do it with kindness and grace and a soft, gentle spirit. That's who I brag on today.
All right.
I bet you never ask me that question again, will you?
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate that. I do.
And very seldom speechless, by the way.
Yeah. So I do appreciate that.
Let's just move on.
Let's just move on. Mike, tell people where they can learn more about you, more about branches. How can we inform them?
Well, you go to davidwilkinson.com.
No.
I'm on a roll. I'm just going to stay with this for a while because I like how it's making you squirm and put you on the spot.
Wiggle, in my chair.
Yes. Thanks for asking that. Branchesblog.com. Mm-hmm. It's a website. It is the kind of the hosting spot for all things content related for branches, my own blogs, podcasts, interviews, that kind of thing. Just kind of a fun place to go to browse through a lot of different material there. Branchesblog.com. There is a place to sign up for a mailing list, and that's very helpful for us. And one of the benefits you get from that is that whenever we drop a new podcast or we write a new blog, then you'll be informed about that. But I'd encourage our listeners to go to branchesblog.com.
Very good. Easy enough. Branchesblog.com. And I will put a link to that in the show notes. And let's get on with it in this episode. This is going to be a really fun conversation.
It is. Rhonda Rush. She did a great job. And I look forward to you getting to meet Rhonda. So let's get started. I am with my good friend, Rhonda Rush. Rhonda and I have been friends for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years now.
At least.
Time flies when you're having fun.
It does.
Yeah. We, in the interest of full disclosure, Rhonda, we go to church together. Rhonda is on staff at the church that I attend. She's a great lady, has a great story. She's, you're an accomplished writer, been published in what's the magazine?
God Post
magazine,
Prison Fellowship magazine.
Yeah.
Murfreesboro Pulse.
Wow.
And I'm writing my own book.
And writing her own book. So she's a terrific communicator, great lady. You work as the recovery director for our church, but also it's almost kind of a community
right.
job that you have
right.
doing that. So, yeah.
Right, yeah. I am definitely not confined to the four walls of Family Worship
right.
Center. Yeah.
Right, well, but let's start with that. That's a good, interesting place to start.
Okay.
And I don't want our conversation to be just about this, but it's hard to talk much about where God has you now without talking a little bit about where you've been. So I was going to start this way. Rhonda used to work for the state making license plates. Is that a subtle way of putting it?
You're not telling it right. I cook the meals for the people that who made the license plates.
Well, tell us just a little bit about the before really God really got a hold of you. Tell about that, Ron. Would you do that?
Okay. Yes. So I grew up in a very rigid, dogmatic, rule following.
Yeah.
Turn or burn.
Yeah.
Split hell wide open. And if you didn't make it to the altar by Sunday, if you did wrong during the week, you were going to split hell wide open.
Isn't it interesting how that legalism, instead of sending us in the right direction,
yes.
often we rebel against that and go
wrong. I've always said that watching what I watched, observing what I observed, from a young age, I said, if that's being a Christian, I don't want any
yeah.
part of it.
Yeah.
And I think that bred the spirit of rebellion in
yeah.
me
yeah.
for a long, long lot of years.
Yeah.
But
so how did that play out?
My dad was a pastor
mm-hmm.
and hardcore fire and brimstone.
Mm-hmm.
And that denomination. And let me backtrack. I have no animosity.
Right.
Towards my mom or my dad, either one. I walk in freedom now. My father died while I was in jail.
Mm.
I didn't even get to go to his funeral.
Mm.
And
wow.
so, but he was hurt people.
Right.
And they
right.
just were as dysfunctional as they produced me to be.
Yeah.
So, you know, I say all that to say, yes, it was awful, but I'm beyond that.
Yeah.
But I did grow up in that dogmatic, beat you head over the Bible. And so very rigid, and I didn't have a concept of God of love.
Yeah.
I thought he was a God of punishment, and his eyes roamed to and fro looking for somebody to mess up.
Yeah, right.
So that was my concept.
Yeah.
So, you know, like a spirit of rebellion, but I went on with my life, you know, I ran away from home at 15. I had my daughter when I was 16.
Mm.
But, you know, God is divine and he orchestrates everything.
Right. Yeah.
I went back to school. I graduated. I've had a few years of college.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to maintain.
Yeah.
I married at 27 and he was a wonderful man.
Yeah.
We had a very good life. And in my early 30s, I don't know if you know David and Rita Baroni,
mm-hmm.
but Rita Baroni is my very best friend.
Right.
And they had left that denomination
uh-huh.
a few years before, and she invited me to church.
Mm.
And it was a non-denominational church.
Right.
And for the very first time in my life, in my 30s, I heard about grace.
Wow.
And mercy.
Wow.
And love. And
You were already living in it without even knowing it, because
right,
you had a good
yes.
husband, God was providing
yes.
a good, yeah, so you're
yes.
living in grace, you just didn't know the name
right,
of it yet.
Right. And so then not only did I hear about it, but I experienced
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's good.
So I just remember we took trips to Chicago, and she would tell me all the Bible stories of my childhood all over again. And,
yeah.
you know, it's like a sponge. So I was like a little baby Christian all over again, and I was just blown away by grace and mercy.
Wow.
But I still had that hardcore legalistic rule following measure up perfectionism.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then I meet grace, mercy, and love, and I don't have a balance between
yeah.
the two.
There's something in me that says,
right.
But I should be earning it. I should be making this happen.
And so then in 2007, you know, I that was in my early 30s.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I've always had a heart for God, always. Yeah. It's just was a confused heart.
Right.
And so my husband died in 2007.
Wow.
So, and it was suddenly, unexpectedly.
How long have you been married?
We were going to Hawaii for our 20th wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
And, okay, let me backtrack again. I had always been on pain pills. And at that time, I didn't know the terms. I didn't understand addiction. But looking back now, I was a functioning addict.
Yeah.
So I functioned fairly well on opiates for 25, 30 years. I did have a few incidences of dipping in the pit,
right.
But I didn't stay there.
Yeah.
And it was just little slaps here and there. So I maintained. 2007, he dies suddenly.
Mm.
And instead of turning to God to help me and to get me through it, I turned to the pills.
Mm. Yeah.
Because that's all I ever knew.
Right.
And I didn't have a balance.
Yeah.
You know, at that time, I'm like, why are you punishing me, God? What are you doing to me?
Yeah.
What did I do wrong?
That's the God you grew up with.
Right. Yeah. So, 2007, I was 47. He died. I spent probably a year and a half in my living room. I had a really good job. I traveled. I could get away with sitting at home.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I did. I sit at home and I swallowed pills.
Mm.
I've taken more pills in a day than some people have taken in their lifetime.
Wow.
And
this is not about that, but initially, where did those pills come from? Were these prescriptions?
Oh, yeah. Initially, prescription, but once you get on that hamster wheel.
Yeah, then you got to find
them. I mean, by the time I was in the bottom of the pit, I had this little group of people that, you know, we knew when we were going to get our prescriptions filled.
Yeah.
And who was going to get who from what and when and where. And how we could all maintain, you know, not going through withdrawal, feeding our beast, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Such dysfunctional, you know, it led to that.
Right.
So, but when Jerry died, I sit in that living room for a year and a half, and I just was I was dead.
Mm-hmm.
I was breathing. I had a pulse, but I was dead.
Yeah.
And my daughter reached out to me one day. She said, Mama, you have got to do something.
Mm.
And, you know, I didn't know what to do and I didn't know what it was all going to lead to, but I started venturing out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still on my pills
mm-hmm.
and I still had to have them. I mean, you could order them off the internet.
Yeah.
I could get a supply of 60 pills every 3 days
mm.
and they would be gone in 3 days.
Wow.
Mm. Sometimes a day.
Yeah.
I could take 60 pills in a day. So, anyway.
How much? I know, did you just hear? How much did that cost? How much were you spending?
I don't even like to go there.
Yeah.
Because it's just so sad.
Yeah.
I made good money.
Uh-huh.
And
spent
probably have a mansion.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all the money I made, we paid our bills, we maintained our household, we had cars, we had grandkids, and we did for them. But every other dollar I had went to pills.
Wow.
When I turned 50 years old, I got my first DUI.
Mm.
And
so that's interesting that you, in spite of all of this, you were 50 before you really had this major run-in with the law.
See, you know what, Mike? Opiate addicts don't make it to my age.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't make it to my age. I've been to funerals.
Yeah.
25, 26, 30, 40. 60 so years old.
The grace of God at work.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can't even, I mean, I know.
Right.
So
that's
anyway,
good.
I got arrested the first time at 50 for DUI. I went to jail. It was a little slap on the mm-hmm. wrist. And you know, I'm invincible, hard headed, and rebellious.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't faze me any. I'm like, meh. So, you know, year after year after year from 2010 to 2015, I just kept getting DUIs.
Wow.
I wrecked probably 7 cars,
mm.
Totaled them. and yeah. I'm still alive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, it's just so many things that are miracles. So anyway, I went to jail in 2015 on my fifth DUI, and I was already on probation. I was already a habitual motor vehicle offender. I was already fighting the system. Mm-hmm. And so I had been in it for like 5 years. And at that point, when I got that one, I was in there and I was not leaving. I was stuck. No bond, mm-hmm. no nothing. You're here. You're going to serve some time.
That was the grace of God as well.
Yes.
It was the grace of God that kept you alive, but it was the grace of God that got you in jail. So,
yes.
Yeah, good.
So I spent 25 months in jail. And here's another of God's perfect timing. I went to the, and you know, I walked around a year, mm-hmm. a whole year. Oh God, why'd you do this to me? How could you let this happen to me? I'm a good Christian. Mm-hmm. I sing in the choir.
Yeah.
For goodness sake. How could you let this happen to me? Woe is me. Why, God? That was a whole year.
Yeah.
You know, self-loathing and just hating myself. And so by the providence of God, I got transferred over to a facility that was about to start a pilot program. Mm-hmm. And it was called the Therapeutic Community. Mm-hmm. And it was at the Work Center in Rutherford County. And I was chosen to be one of the 12 people
wow.
that went in that program. And that's where, for the first time, I learned about addiction.
Mm.
I learned about the brain
yeah.
and addiction. We had counselors. We had social workers. We went to classes 3 and 4 days a week,
yeah.
cognitive restructuring for the brain, social skills, you name it.
Isn't that great?
We yeah. had classes on it. Yeah. But the most important thing is I learned about addiction.
Right.
Because I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was. Yeah. I just thought I was what I'd been told all my life,
right.
a failure. You know, my father used very shameful tactics.
Yeah.
As punishment, as well as physical. You know, it was all spiritual, physical, emotional.
Yeah.
And so, you know, God knew. He knew exactly how long I needed.
Right.
He knew what I needed to get when yeah. I was there. So in all of this 25 months, it took a year to pick a mirror up.
Yeah.
It took a year to say, no, wait a minute.
Right. Yeah, if they had started that program earlier, you might have been too angry or bitter to join it. If they'd started it later, you might have been in a place where you say, well, I'm doing better. I don't need it. So just the perfect
all
time
providence.
To say, yeah,
I can this look is at, I can look at everything.
Yeah.
All
yeah,
of it.
That's good.
All
that's
of
good,
it is God's Ron. Providence.
Yeah.
Providence.
Good.
Anyway, that program, that's where I met Mary Dale Williams.
Right.
You know, she's my... Look,
right.
I got my bracelet on. It says Sister by Choice.
Maridale yeah. was she just retired, the mm-hmm. founder and the director of
Doors of Hope. I was surrounded by Christians, the
yeah.
Word of God, women who loved me
yeah.
and wanted to see me get on the other side of this and do good instead of living in the pit that I lived in all my life.
Yeah.
So it was people, the place, the time. All of it just got orchestrated. He was orchestrating it all along. He was putting things in place.
And great. Yeah.
When I walked out of there, my face was forward, but I still wasn't well.
Mm-hmm.
I was clean of the chemicals.
Right.
My brain had healed.
Right.
The prefrontal cortex of my brain had healed. And I knew I don't have to have the pills.
Mm-hmm.
I can live without them. I'm not going to die.
Right.
So that's how I walked out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought I was in recovery.
Right.
Recovery started the day after I got out of jail.
Yeah, then you start
that's
doing
when
real life
starts.
And, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and, you know, even
good.
Now today, I just finished trauma therapy.
Yeah.
And I'm still, you know, walking it out.
Right.
Recovery is a way of life.
Absolutely.
And recovery
that's good.
Is
yeah.
not the abstinence of chemicals. It's community, connection, and Christ.
Yeah. Good.
That is recovery.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I have to pinch myself. I just cannot. I don't know why.
Yeah.
This is my verse and I have to go to it because I feel inadequate. I'm not equipped. I don't know how I'm the one, but God says, you didn't choose me. Mm-hmm. I chose you.
That's good.
And so I just walk in that. I'm nothing special. I'm a hot mess. I mess up. But here I am, send me.
Wow. That's so good. That's great, Rhonda. You have a Facebook page.
It's a Facebook
page. Mm-hmm. And it is From the Pit to the Palace.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to me that as you were talking about this, the pit was not being in jail. The pit was where you were before you went in jail.
Yes.
And then jail was on your way.
Yes. So I sit in front of the computer that night and I typed it all out. And I'm like, okay, God, if you want me to tell my story, you're going to have to help me.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say a hand picked me up and pushed the send button, but a hand picked me up and pushed the send button. And I just sent it.
Yeah.
And I went to bed and I got up the next morning and there were hundreds of responses from all over the United States. I mean, I can't even tell you what all they said. Just thank you for opening my eyes.
Oh, yeah. It makes a difference
for everybody else. I have compassion for my daughter. I didn't realize this was happening in the church. Thank you for your transparency. You know, just all of these things. And I just cried and cried and cried and read all those. And it was like the light bulb moment. And God spoke to me. And he said, I freed you from addiction, and now I'm going to free you from the shame.
Yeah. Well, that's
and
good.
And so from that moment on, I've always said transparency renders shame powerless and the enemy ineffective.
Yeah, that's good.
So.
Yeah. In the 12 steps, we say every time you tell your story, your shame is cut in half. And so I have found that by preempting the devil, you know, and I tell the story first, and the devil comes along and says, "Well, if these people really knew about you," I say, "Dale, I just told them the story.
I know.
So, yeah.
Go away.
That's so good.
Get
that's
me behind
great,
me."
Yeah. Well, you have a great story, and you tell it well. But you have a great story. But a lot of people have a great story, and then it stops there. But I've watched you, Rhonda, use that story to impact and empower other people. And that's the testimony is that, to use your From the Pit to the Palace, you know, Joseph said, you meant this to me for evil, but God meant it to me for good. I'd love to have you come back again and talk about the ministry and kind of the other side of,
I'll come and talk about cleaning fish if you want me to.
That would be a good one. That'd be a great. So Rhonda, thanks for coming today. Thanks for being a part of this.
Thank you so very much. It's an honor.
Didn't Rhonda do a good job? She is such a great lady, passionate for God, and passionate about recovery. It's been amazing over a relatively short period of time to see how God has used her and her willingness to talk about her addiction and talk about the depths from which she came. God has used that to put her in a place where she helps people week after week after week. She helps people to find a path towards healing and recovery, and she's not afraid to go into the gutters to reach them. I'm proud of Rhonda. I'm grateful for our friendship, and it's fun to see what God is doing in her life. For those of us who have been in any kind of recovery, we have come to grips at some point with the 12 steps. I will confess that it's kind of a love it or hate it relationship. Often there are people who feel like the 12 steps are too much focusing on the pain of the past. And I understand that. I will just say that for me, the 12 steps have been incredibly helpful. And I understand the vagueness that people are uncomfortable with sometimes. 12 steps talk a lot about your higher power. I think that was an attempt on Bill W.'s part to be all things to all people. Most of the groups that I've been in, the guys will say, my higher power has a name. His name is Jesus. So we know who the higher power is. But I love the 12 steps. I think that almost everyone would benefit by following a 12-step program. If you never struggled with any kind of addiction, I think you'd be better off for the 12 steps. So I thought I would close with the 12 steps is also full of wonderful, wisdom. Sometimes, you know, some of the smartest people that I know are people that are recovering from addictions. It took a lot of smarts to try to balance, spin all the plates while all this was going on. I found out personally, I had a whole lot more brain energy than I knew when I quit having to lie all the time and remember the story I told last night about today. When I got rid of all that, I got a whole lot smarter. So the 12 steps is just full of some really bright people with great senses of humor. And so there's just a lot of neat wisdom. Here are four sayings, just four that are not the official 12-step material, but everybody who's ever been in one of those rooms has heard these statements from one at one time or another. Here's one I like. I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. That describes every addict that I know. It describes just about every person that I know, to tell you the truth. And it certainly described me, that there is a time I'm so disgusted with who I am and so ashamed of who I am. And yet, all I do is think about me, is dwell on me. I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. Isn't that a good one? Here's another one. Wherever I go, there I am. You know, we've all tried to outrun our problems. We've all tried to go to a different location, to change churches, to move to a different job, to leave this marriage and go to another marriage, only to find out that we were taking the problem with us wherever we went. Wherever I go, there I am. And most of the time, I'm the source of all the discontent in my life. I really like this one. You can't think yourself into a new way of living. You need to live yourself into a new way of thinking. Man, that is so powerful. When I began to change my behavior, when I began to do the right things and not do the wrong things, then before long, the stinking thinking passed me by and I began to think more clearly and think in the right way. You can't think yourself into a right way of living. You have to live yourself into a right way of thinking. And then here's the last one that's not, it's not unfamiliar with people, whether you've been in the 12 steps or not. And the grammar is not great for all of you school teachers out there, but the message is powerful. God don't make no junk. God don't make no junk. He knows what he's doing. He knows who you are. He knows exactly where he has you. And he will use your story of addiction as he has used Rhonda's. He'll use yours to make such a difference for people in the world if you'll just let him. I hope that you will. So what difference does that make? Wherever you've been, whatever you've done, whatever you face, God is there. And his desire is to take everything the enemy meant for evil and to use it for your good. Let him do that. By the way, love yourself today because God does.
What Difference Does That Make with Dr. Mike Courtney is part of the Mana 3 Media Network. It is hosted by Dr. Mike Courtney and is produced and edited by me, David Wilkinson. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We'd love for you to subscribe to What Difference Does That Make wherever podcasts are downloaded. Be sure to check out our episode show notes. You can learn more about Branches Counseling Center on Facebook and Instagram, and you can check out more podcasts by Mana 3 Media, including my own, Dad Matters, on Instagram, at Mana 3 Media. That's M-A-N-A, the number 3, Media.
To find out more about Branches, we encourage you to go to branchescounselingcenter.com or call 615-904-7170.